This is Climate Opportunity.
Climate Opportunity.
Climate Opportunity Podcast.
Welcome to the Climate Opportunity Podcast, the podcast that spotlights innovators and pioneers across Africa who are transforming the challenge of climate change into opportunities for growth, innovation, and sustainability. Today, we are diving into the world of environmental communication, a crucial front in our fight against climate change, and how we can make it accessible to all and sundry. To explore this topic with us, we have on the show today a pioneer in Nigeria's climate dialogue, Seyifumi Adebote.
Today we've got someone I'm really, really eager and excited to speak with, but I would not break the rule. I would still allow you to do your introduction because I believe that introductions are personal stories. So when you have the chance, allow people to introduce themselves. That's the best way to do it, right? So I'd allow you to introduce yourself and then I will do my own introduction properly later. But by far, I think you're one of the strongest, loudest, clearest voices in Nigeria's climate struggle. I don't like to call it struggle, but the whole Nigeria climate conversation and the climate, the word we use, space. And for the lack of better words, the one of the OGs of this thing. And a little bit of context, when I used to be at the Nigeria Climate Innovation Center, where I was just more like an FBI of climate change, just looking at everybody, I was just like, man, who is this guy? Like, this guy is in everybody's face with this climate thing. Great, great. And to have you, oh God, I'm beginning to do what I said I would not do, but for context, he has a podcast where he has spoken to everyone I am dreaming to speak with. Incredible. Seyifumi, welcome to the podcast and please introduce yourself.
Many thanks. Thanks indeed. I mean, being a podcaster myself, it's quite unreal being on the other side of the divide. I'm the one asking all the questions.
Exactly. And
being all of these things. So it feels a little bit absurd, but yes, I'm glad to be here and thanks for having this conversation. I'm very much looking forward to it. I'm glad that it's not just one person, because when I started this, it was just like, I need more Nigerians to understand this whole climate change thing from our own perspective. And I could do it through podcast because I thought, okay, it's an avenue that is coming up. I tried through radio for a while, but that was also limited. I'm like, yeah, let's attempt this with podcast. And this was in 2018 when we thought about this idea and commenced it in January of 2019. And now I'm glad to see that there is the Climate Opportunity Podcast. I've also been supporting a few other people in developing podcasts. So I'm excited that there are a lot more players in this climate educational space. But we'll get into that in a bit. To introduce myself was what you asked me. I just love to see myself as a Nigerian who is exploring environmental communication and doing that not just on the national level, but also digging into regional level, the international level, the multilateral level, and just trying to see how environmental communications works and to sort of tailor it down to an audience that I think listens to the things that I say through my social media platform, through the podcast I host, through organizations that I belong to, through different projects that I work with. Yeah, so to introduce myself, yes, Seyifumi Adebote, I host the Climate Talk podcast. I am not a climate change activist, as some people think. I love to think of myself as an environmentalist. I also write. Yeah, I think that suffices for now.
Fantastic. And thank you so much. I think I won't say thank you. One, for the role you've played in pioneering a lot of things, and also for holding the fort and for championing climate education in very different ways. And for being a clear voice, right? That's been incredible. But let's get right into it. Most of the people we spoke to first season have been innovators and creators. But this season, we're trying to bring in everyone. There are people who are not innovating by creating products. There are people who are innovating by creating ideas or shaping conversations, and you are one of them. Why is it so important that you have decided to take environmental communications as a thing? Why is that an important thing for an individual that I've spoken with you a couple of times and I've heard you say environmental communications? Why the need for that?
Great. So I should say that I found myself here because it's like a nexus of two things that sort of defines who I am. In 2009, I enrolled for a program in the environmental resource management of a school back then. And I spent 5 years studying things around environmental resources. So that gave me the academic perspective of environments and the challenges and the conflicts and the human-animal relations, human-nature relations. So I understood that from a very natural science perspective, a very academic perspective, if you would say. And after that, I came out of school and I started to think about, I was interested in communications generally. So I worked with some radio stations, worked with some of the foremost magazines in Nigeria. Maybe you remember Encomium. I also worked with a few other, some mainstream publication outfits, let's put it that way. And I built my competence there as a communicator, but not in environment in any way. It was just trying to communicate, get news, write news, get reports, try to understand some policy brief and write it in short, in like summary forms. And after a while, I got into another role that took me away from these things completely, away from communications, as it were, and away from the natural part of environments. And it was there that I found this gap. I was doing that, I was fulfilled, it was good. But then I thought to myself, like, hey, how then can we communicate things about the environment? And that was sort of when I retraced my path and I'm like, yeah, this is one thing I want to do now, communicate about the environment. And it was about that time climate change became topical and a lot of people were defining themselves as climate change actors, climate activists, climate justice, which I respect. But for me, I was very clear that I wasn't going to define myself based on what was topical at the time. I understood that my role is also beyond climate change, if we look at it as a bubble. It is just like a subset of the bigger environmental picture where I want to be very active. I mean, we can struggle to make the connection between climate change and every other environmental sector, but it is obvious when you look at the environment as the bigger umbrella and climate change as a subset. So I thought, hey, well, I've pretty much spent 5 years studying forestry, wildlife. I've volunteered for like ocean conservation. I'd contributed to a few other environmental components. So it just didn't make sense to stick to just the climate change definition because that was what was topical. So that was how I found myself in that space of environmental communication. And I began to think, how can I do this differently? What is missing? And it was then I realized, partly by exposure also, which I'm very thankful that I had, attending, you know, a lot of conferences. I was in 2019 the youngest delegate to the General Assembly with the president, the ministers. I also attended a lot of UN conferences in different parts of the world. And for every meeting I was in, and this is something I always said, it was like I was carrying the weight of 1.3 billion Africans on my shoulder. Or if we look at it in Nigeria, over 100 million Nigerians, young people. And I just kept, if 100 million Nigerians were in this room, would they really understand what is being said? Would they make sense of all of these things? And it was then I said, okay, I will try to take these conversations, this big grammar, and then break it down in simple ways and talk about it in as simple as it can be. Get these big boys and the small boys to talk about these things, but in very simple terms, and also to document the work that different people were doing to make a change. Work that may not be on the global platform, but even at that local grassroots level, it is very meaningful and can be a model. So that was pretty much what sort of pivoted me into where I am right now.
In the heart of Nigeria, the challenge of climate change meets the force of informed advocacy. Here, communication strategies are not just about spreading information. but about wearing a narrative that resonates with every Nigerian, regardless of their background.
Leading up or following up on that, aside from the fact that, of course, there are more people talking about climate change now, from that point to here, what significant improvements have we been able to make in terms of building the African narrative when it comes to climate change conversations or even environmental justice as a whole?
Yeah, I think the biggest change we've made is when we look at the dynamics of the people that are talking now. And I don't just mean young people. Secondly, if we look at what exactly are these people talking about, the narrative has changed. I can break it down in a bit. But the first point I made, in 2016, 17, when I started to explore this space, I understood clearly that it was a government thing to talk about climate change. Government and government only. The academics were doing their thing, but they were in a bubble, separate bubble. Oh, professor of this, professor of that. And maybe once in a while, you see them meet with the government and that's it. But everything that has to do with the decision, most part of the conversation were just the government. So they just felt this climate change thing is for the government. There was even rarely any picture of young people in the space. The government, sometimes the academics. And if we compare then and now, we can see that there is a broad mix of people that are now actively engaged in climate change conversation. And this also stems into the results, some of which I may list year after. But in terms of the audience now, the government are still there doing all the leading some of this conversation, but there's civil society now giving some pushback, checkmating some of what the government is doing and not doing. There's the academia trying to put the scientific part or some academic arguments to both sides of the divide, whether you're totally for or against, depending on how you see it. There's always academic backings for that. We have the youth group that is pushing for the urgency. Hey, we need to do something and we need to do it now. And I must admit, even if we don't know everything as young people, but the fact that our voice is prominent is pushing some of these actions. Now, the second part of it is, what then are we talking about? The conversation has now shifted from, I mean, I remember very clearly in 2000 and maybe 17, 18, when you talk of climate change and you say, oh, climate change has caused flood, the next thing you hear is ecological fund, and that was all. So about the finance, the conversation has shifted from ecological fund now. We're talking about the GCF, we're talking about the GEF, we're talking about multilateral bank-led financial contributions to the solution. We're also talking a lot about loss and damage finances. So the way we've been talking about finances has really changed over time because of, like I said, the actors that are now in this conversation. Another sort of subsector that we've been talking about is policies. Before now, policies were made by the government. Maybe they contracted a few people. They put it out there. The newspapers carries it. Nigeria has adopted this policy, or we've signed this policy, and that's it. But now, there's a lot of involvement of different groups in policy making. I recall in 2021, we led young people shaping the revised edition of the NDCs. This was something that had never happened before. I mean, they just felt, what do young people know about the national determined contribution? So it was like, what do young people know about this? Why do we need them here? But then, because over time we've become very active in the conversation, we've sort of made a case, we've shown competency, we've been consistently talking about these things. So it was possible to get the government to say, yes, we want to see what the young people think, and we could revise the NDCs then, make solid contribution, and follow through with it. So in terms of policy also, that's another part that we've witnessed a lot of change. And now, to state the obvious, is communication. Of course, there's been a lot. I mean, you being a communication expert yourself, you know how communication has changed over the years, and there's a lot of things being said in simple message, in complex message, from young people to old people, from faith-based organizations. Different groups of people can now align what they stand for with the dynamics or some components of our environment or climate change, as it were. and make a statement. And all of this is now shaping how climate change or environmental activities generally is being communicated. So,
all right.
I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, I have something to say here that I want to chip in as you go on, because you've hinged on communication and for time. I'm looking at communication as a whole. And yes, you're right. I think we're doing well. But I saw a report last week that kind of made me feel, there's a lot of work to do. And I wanted to hear your thoughts about it. It's a Yale Center for Climate Change report. They did a social listening project with Meta in a couple of countries. I think it was a global thing. And the findings was that 76% of Nigerians know little or nothing about climate change. So you said from where you were at that time, we've come a long way. But 76% of Nigerians still don't know anything, know little or nothing about climate change. So where do we go from here?
I mean, first, I must admit, that report by every metrics is nothing to challenge, is nothing to put to test. I can give you the World Risk Poll. World Risk Poll is also like another very big organization that focuses mainly on like polls and all that. I think it is facilitated by the LR Foundation. I can't recall the full name, but World Risk Poll is like very big when it comes to polls. And in 2019, they did this global assessment about how many people really knew about climate change and how many people thought it was like a very serious threat. And if you look at it on a global context, the fact that just about 41 people thought that climate change is a very serious threat in 2019 is also something to be worried about. But if we are to do the social listening again, or if we are taking this Nigerian social listening, for instance, say in 2009, maybe the figures will be somewhere around 1991, 92 or so. So I would say that there is still a lot of work to be done, no doubt. I recall, I think it was 2020 also, when I did a social listening for some group. And it was really difficult to get people who were infusing understanding of climate change to the different happenings, environmental happenings that were occurring in Nigeria. For instance, you see news talking about flooding, you see talks about food insecurity, you see talks about human-animal conflict, you see talks about high temperature, and these talks were very isolated and not really seen in the context of climate change, which basically hints at how much people know that these things are all symbols or low-hanging fruits falling from the old big tree of climate change. So do many people even know about climate change? I mean, Nigeria is, 200 million people? If you look at our educational statistics, I don't think we can confidently say about 50% are really like educated. So these are some of the metrics that then defines how people then understand. So there's still a lot of work to be done. And that's why it cannot just be done in English like you and I. It has to be done in the local languages. It has to be done not just through words, through images, graffitis, cartoons.
We explore the significance of local languages and cultural narratives in environmental communication. This approach not only enhances engagement, but it also ensures that the message of sustainability is accessible to all, fostering a collective effort towards environmental stewardship.
Now you're getting into innovation in communication. And I want to ask you, as a communications person, you've highlighted the problem. This is decolonization you're beginning to talk about now. How do we decolonize the narratives, not just in terms of the vehicle we use or the mediums in terms of language, but how do we unbundle this thing for people who speak Fulfulde, people who speak Idoma, people who speak Efik, people who speak Ibibio, people who speak Ijaw language, people who speak, because people always think about Yoruba, Hausa, and Igbo, but there are, I think, about 250 something languages in Nigeria. Because when we say 72% or 76% of Nigerians know little or nothing about climate change, it's because we're only speaking about climate change in English. As a comms person, how do we unlock, this is Climate Opportunity Podcast, so we're always looking at the opportunity. How do we unlock the opportunity? This is an opportunity. It looks like a problem, but I think it's an opportunity. How do we unlock this opportunity to reach 76% of Nigerians, which is clearly over 100 million people in that bracket, and ensure that they understand these things? Because we always need to have the backing of the people for any serious social transformation to happen. So how do we create that?
Great. Thanks for that question, Daniel. So I tell you this, I'm a Yoruba person. I grew up in Lagos, born in Lagos, stayed more than 20 years in Lagos. I lived with my parents who are also Yoruba speaking. But if you ask me to make a presentation about climate change in Yoruba, Daniel, I will flop. That's the truth. And why is it so? Is it because I do not know Yoruba? I do. Is it because I do not know climate change? I do. Yeah. But can I make those connections? Even as a comms person, I really can't. And this is what I think. There is a big gap between our generational understanding of the language first. And to solve it, or as an attempt to unlock the opportunities, as you put it, I would imagine a platform or a forum where we bring the elders, the wisest of people across these 250 plus ethnic groups. And then we bring the young people. This is what I mean. Go into a community in Akwa Ibom, for instance, look for an Ibibio man who's been maybe he's in his 70s or in his 80s. So he clearly understands the language, right? Get another young person who is probably 18 or 20 years old, who is very savvy with communications and knows, you know, how to talk about this. And he's also from Ibibio. So he understands the language in some ways. And get them to talk. Let this young person tell this old man about everything, about climate change, the way you understand, using the simplest of language. And let him listen to this old man tell his own story. And then weave it with what he has heard from this young person. And document all of this across these 250 languages. Compile it. And I think that can be a very useful toolkit for us to communicate to these 76% of people that we're talking about.
Cultural resonance is key in environmental communication. By tapping into local stories and leveraging cultural identifiers, environmental messages become more than just information. They transform into a call to action that is both personal and communal. Nigeria's diversity presents both a challenge and opportunity for environmental communication. Addressing this, our focus shifts to innovative methods that cut across linguistic and cultural barriers, highlighting the importance of adaptability in environmental messaging.
Excellent. So you've just on this podcast, for anyone listening, say Seifemi has created a project for 2024.
I hope we can bring that to life, and I will be very happy to support it.
Yeah, I think there's an opportunity there. There should be a way to do it. We can do a pilot with maybe 10 languages, just bring the sages in those languages, speak to them, or communicate these things to them in the simplest way possible, and then let them regurgitate that same thing in their language. And that would do two things. I think it would help preserve the local languages, and it would help make sense of these things. And I think it would also be a learning process, because we would therefore be able to get some data about what has changed for them, or climate change through their eyes.
Exactly.
I think we'd also be able to see, some of them might have ideas about resilience or adaptation that we never know. But thank you so much for that hack.
I think this intergenerational documentation of climate change as we know it, and putting it together to form a communication toolkit. Will be very, very useful on different climes, like you've said.
Exactly. And I'm hoping that there'll be a vehicle or opportunity to act on this. I think I'm going to take this very seriously. We'll find a way around this. I think this is what the, if we don't say anything again on this podcast today, I think this is a good place to bring it to a close. I wish we could just drag on and on, but you've given insights, you've given an action point, and you've given a very, very powerful, profound solution to a huge problem. And I think that I will be back to talk to you about this, but I'm not going to be back to talk about the idea. We're going to be reviewing the impact of that project because it's going to happen. I'm going to leave this podcast today to go think about that, and we'll find a way.
Today's discussion illuminates the actionable steps we can all take towards sustainability. It is through informed choices and community engagement that we can make a tangible impact, showcasing how knowledge can catalyze change. As we conclude, let's remember the power of informed communication in shaping a sustainable future. It is through understanding, engagement, and action that we can confront the challenges of climate change together.
Thank you so much, Sheifumi. Last words, final words on the podcast?
I think I would use the same final words I use on my podcast, that no action is too small. If there could then be another final word, it could be that the biggest solution to climate change, many people wonder, what is the biggest thing I can do about this problem? And for me, it's quite simple. Just be curious about it, learn a lot more about it, and then you can define solutions for yourself. So there is no one, take it, this is the solution. But if you learn about these things in your context, in your language, in your country, then you can very gradually begin to think of what and what you can do. And that's also linked to the previous point I made, that no action is too small.
Thank you so much, Sheifumi. Thank you for coming on the podcast. It's been a very incredible opportunity to listen to you. For hindsight, because hindsight is a huge gift, for the gift of hindsight, the insights you've brought, and of course, that closing line is powerful, that we should stay curious and open our ears and our hearts to learn more, because it's in learning that we'll find the solution. Thank you so much. It's been really, really fun speaking with you. I definitely think you'll be back on the podcast. Trust me, you will be back, because there's something we're going to be talking about. Thank you for your time. Over to everyone listening.
Thank you for joining us on the Climate Opportunity Podcast today. As we go about our daily activities, let's continue to seek opportunities for change and drive towards a sustainable future. Stay inspired and see you in the next episode. Goodbye.